coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation. It's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome to Hagman. It's the Hagman Report for today. It's Tuesday, January 28th, 2020. I keep wanting to say 2019. I'm holding on to the last decade as well as the previous decades, I suppose. As we all are, I think it was a simpler time in life, wasn't it? A lot of news, a lot of information to pass along to each one of you, and I want to thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for your belief and trust in this platform. You know, sometimes I have, every day I've got a schedule. Every day I've got a list of things I do want to speak about and talk about and address. Obviously, there's no shortage of news. There's no shortage of any kind of there's no want for discussion of headlines. And I just want to come out and say, again, thank you to everyone who supports this platform. Thank you so much for your belief in us. Thank you for your financial support, whether it's by mail, by Patreon, by PayPal. I do receive everything that comes into this office, whether it's by email or snail mail or whatever, I read everything. And I want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart for that. I wasn't planning on doing this, and I wasn't planning on saying this, but I guess I will. I'd like your prayers for tomorrow. Steve Quayle and I are going to be walking into a lion's den tomorrow. I can't really get into what's going on, except there's a lot of stuff going on in the background. You know, we collectively watched as Alex Jones, InfoWars, was deplatformed every place. He was just ripped to shreds. And of course, he's subject to numerous, lawsuits himself and different things. And at the end of the day, you look at this and you say, well, what's this all about? Well, obviously, it's all about taking away his free speech. Whether you like him or don't like him, it should send chills down your spine, up and down your spine, I believe. And tomorrow we've got, Steve and I are taking one more step or have one more step in the litigation realm. And that's all I'm going to say. That's all I'm going to say. We ask for your prayers. I truly believe what we are faced with today is largely the globalist desire to stop any information that challenges the narrative. And you might say, well, hey, duh, you know, obviously, what's wrong with you? You knew that. You know that. And there's a difference between saying it and living it. There's a difference between being part, you know, having, being part in the fight and just simply reporting on it. And think of it yourself. If you've got a social network presence. Let's say you've got a Facebook and you take and you send out pieces of information. Oh, I don't know. That's important to you, that you believe is news, not extraordinarily fake news or, you know, and you believe is news, whether it be topical issues like today about the impeachment or the leftist globalist plans to destroy our constitutional republic or the travel ban, whatever the subject, and you go ahead and you use your platform, your voice, because each one of us has a voice now with the various social media outlets, and you go out and you make that public, you make a statement or you present a news item, and you are taken off because it's to the overseers of this, it's fake news. And it's not. It's censorship. So imagine that on a larger scale. And I point to Alex Jones and InfoWars. You know, and I've spoken to Alex about this. I've spoken to others as well about this. Alex Jones, David Knight, Owen Schroyer. I've spoken to all of them about this issue. And it's different when you're on the other side and you're in that battle and you are just constantly getting barraged. I mean, you wake up in the morning. You know what? This is a little kind of a digression. When you wake up in the morning, there is that, oh, I don't know, that few seconds, that maybe 10 seconds of bliss in a sense where you just kind of wake up. And between that moment of consciousness and the start of your day, the really full awareness, think about this. You've forgotten about all of the problems of the days before, days, weeks, months, years before. You've forgotten about what happened yesterday, or it's not, you know, you're not thinking about that. And for that, just for those few seconds of time, you've got this clarity and rest. You know what I'm talking about? You wake up and it's great. Think about that, you know, that relief. And then all of a sudden you say, oh yeah, I've got this to do and that to do today. And, oh, that's right. This happened yesterday, or that took place, or, but just for that moment, you've got some level of, what would you call it? I want to say unawareness, lack of awareness, peace, I suppose. Boy, wouldn't it be great to capture that? You know what I'm talking about, right? Eric the Tech, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Thank you. I don't know if, you know, sometimes I don't make myself clear a lot of times, but there's that just that time when you just open your eyes and you're just feeling, oh yeah, okay, wow, that was a great sleep. But none of that stuff is on your mind. It hasn't even kind of entered back into your mind. Oh yeah. And then of course, then reality strikes. Oh yeah. Oh, that's right. I got to go to work. Oh yeah. Oh, I got that dentist appointment. Oh yeah. Or even worse. You know what I'm referring to. I mean, you know, the overall picture I'm trying to create. And you might say, well, what does that have to do with anything? I guess that feeling is kind of what I'm trying to convey. Is, wouldn't that be great to have that feeling all the time? And we can, obviously. We can through prayer and through prayerful, approach to our lives and such. But all of us, we all have problems. We all have issues. We all have things that we've got to address and we have addressed and are problematic, but you know what I'm talking about. So, all right. So that was kind of a digression, but, yeah, please, if you don't mind, we'd appreciate your prayers, but at the end of the day, and the bottom line here, is the fact that the alternative or the new media sources are and continue to be under attack. And President Trump has not stepped in and said, oh, hey, we have to fix this or fix that. Nor, I'm not really sure it's his place as president. You still have that. You've got the separation of powers. You've got the enumerated powers within the Constitution. But we have a Constitution that's being violated every single day. Every day. We see it with the impeachment hearings, if that's what you'd like to call them. That's what they're being described as, impeachment hearings. The trial now in the Senate, day six. Just having seen that, the testimony there. So at this moment, what I want to do is I want to kind of start with the bottom line today and then work upwards. So if we start really down here at the bottom of the final paragraph, if you will, the final chapter, even the epilogue, we're going to leave that aside. Just the last part of the book, shall we say, the last paragraph. That gives away the ending, obviously, in terms of the objective of the globalist, and work upwards from there. Now, the epilogue I will set aside as God's plan. Because it really, God's in control, right? He is. God's in control. We have to believe that, I think, as Christians. And as Christian conservatives, we have to believe that God's in control. But there's the free will element involved here, is there not? So that's what makes life interesting and mixes things up. All right. So here, the bottom line is this. We are in a fight for our lives. You and I are in a fight for our lives. We are in a fight for the future of our children. We're in the fight for the future of our country. We are in the fight every single day, the larger picture of things, the globalist dark agenda that they have, that they want to ram down our throats, and they are using every single tool. It seems that way right now in their arsenal, in their every arrow in their quiver they're using right now to shoot at us, you and I, in order to force their will down our throats, whether it be gun control, whether it be travel restrictions, whether it be, you name the item. You've got the different columns, economics, the culture, everything. You've got different headings, but every single front is under attack. So the bottom line here is they want you dead. They want us dead. Oh, and you might say, come on, that's just so ridiculous, you know. To the average American on the street, and you and I don't think you're average, and you probably don't think I'm average. Hold those comments there, Eric. Nice short bus comment there, right? Okay, yeah. But they want us dead. And when I first heard that statement, like you perhaps, if you're new to this broadcast, like you, you know, I would think, well, that's a pretty severe statement. And I'm not sure I agree with that, but now I do. I want to take you to the bottom line. Alex Jones had done a video, I think 13 years ago, called The End Game. I want to just kind of tap that a little bit. You know what, Eric, I'm not sure which one, if it's one or if it's number two. What's the other one? You can't hear this, folks. This is a dialogue, actually. That's the one. Okay. Let's start off with that one. And take a look. This is the bottom line, I believe. What do you think? Yeah?
People starting in China.
How much control of information should there be? And by whom? And how can false information be effectively challenged? And what if that false information is coming from companies or from governments?
We're at a moment where the social media platforms have to step forward and recognize the moment to assert that they're a technology platform and not a broadcaster is over. They, in fact, have to be a participant in broadcasting accurate information and partnering with the scientific and health communities to counterweight, if not flood the zone, of accurate information, because to put the genie back in the bottle of the misinformation and disinformation is nigh impossible.
One thing we haven't spoken about, and I'm wondering whether it's time to talk about this, is a step up from the part of the governments on enforcement actions against fake news.
Okay. That was my label video too, right? All right, let me mark that down here. All right, you heard what was said there. That was part of Event 201, which I referenced yesterday. In that specific area of a multi-lengthy discussion panel, dealt specifically with fake news. Who determines if news is fake? Because yesterday on Fox News, you might have, if you watched Sean Hannity, he went in and discussed, as a matter of fact, I've got a, I think I might have that clip, or maybe I don't. I don't have that clip. But he discussed the New York Times, the Washington Post, and other newspapers delivering headlines that were, and stories that were false, proven false. This, to me, that section there, in that event 201 was dealing with a pandemic. Interestingly enough, that happened on October 18th of last year. They were kind of wargaming out a pandemic, and they happened to pick coronavirus. Yeah, no coincidence there, right? And they were talking about the spread, and you saw at the very, very beginning the spread and stuff. But what they were addressing there was the fake news about the spread of this virus and how to deal with those individuals or companies or people or groups who were spreading news that they determined to be fake, and how social media in this case, but it was more, could step in and stop that spread of fake news. It was fascinating. It's fascinating to think about and to watch the gaming out of this. Now, that particular segment was extracted from a larger segment on band.video about the documentary Endgame by Alex Jones, which was done 13 or so years ago. And on the back of that DVD is a simple statement. They want you dead. That's the bottom line. The bottom line is simple. They want us dead. And you say, who is us? Who are we? Who do they want dead? They want Christians and Christian conservatives. They want us dead. Anyone who doesn't conform to their ideological and theological beliefs, they want you gone. Now, short of the, you know, pulling a Pol Pot kind of thing, or Mao or a Hitler type of scenario, where there's mass exterminations and genocide, well, they're taking the softer, kinder approach, right? They're actually coming in, and first of all, they're nullifying your information. They're stopping their information. They're vilifying. They're doing all of that, as Steve says, and ultimately for your destruction. So that's a very important bottom line statement. They want us dead. And again, Endgame, that segment came from that event 201. And one more time, the reason I selected that too is now we are dealing with this alleged pandemic. I say alleged because really, do we really know what the facts are about this virus? We don't know. When it comes right down to it, we don't know how it began. I know you say, you're saying, oh, I do. I saw this video, or I saw that video, or no, we really don't know how it began, do we? We have suspicions. We can speculate based on a lot of open source information. We know where it began. We know the conditions under which allegedly it began, but we don't know everything about it. Some say it started in China near a open air seafood market. Others say it came from Canada, from a bioweapons lab, but we really don't know. And I just want to caution everyone to take a look at what we do know and use our critical thinking to apply it to this situation. Knowing what the end game objective is, what the bottom line objective is, they want us dead. Does that make sense to you? It's a piece by piece by piece we have to look at this. And rather than go off and, you know, with our hair on fire kind of approach, although there might be a time when that's appropriate, you know, but hey, hold on a minute here. Let's look at all of the facts. I do believe this is bad. I believe that this is understated. I received a phone message, and thank you, Chris, for the message. from just south of me. And if you're watching this or listening to this, I want to say thank you for the phone call. Now, this gentleman is connected to the military. I'll leave it at that. And he said, you know, in the message, he said, man, this coronavirus is actually worse than being reported. Now, I'll just leave it there again, because how much worse and how much, what are we basing that on? Are we watching a YouTube video where, for example, you see people falling down as they're walking in the street, or are you comparing that to what's being reported on mainstream media? The legacy media. So we have to be careful in the translation of things like that. But I do suspect that knowing him and knowing, and I owe him a phone call, but knowing what he said, look, I believe it's worse than it's being reported. As Ted Brewer said yesterday, what, 3 or 4 on his level of concern out of 10? Yeah, I'd put it up there about maybe 5 right now at this point, based on everything I've seen. But see, that goes back to saying, you know, is this a weapon that's being used against us? Is the coronavirus a weapon? And, you know, if it wasn't a weapon to begin with, they certainly can weaponize this virus. And think about this. They can weaponize it in a number of different ways. If it wasn't a weapon to begin with, they can weaponize it by twisting the information. They can weaponize it by saying, well, that's fake information that you're peddling, so we're going to take you off. We're going to deplatform you and shut you up and take you out of the picture, right? Isn't it? So it's exploiting, maybe weaponization is too strong of a term, but the exploitation of what's taking place. So I urge everyone just to kind of look at all of this through this prism of the bottom line. They want us dead. All right. So closely related to that was the first video then. And, this is just under 3.5 minutes. And, let's play this one. This is from the same source band video. When you're ready, Eric.
Renewed hostile actions against United States ships on the high seas in the Gulf of Tonkin have today required me to order the military forces of the United States to take action in reply.
No, it was just confusion. And events afterwards showed that our judgment that we'd been attacked that day was wrong.
A standoff between a man who was wanted by the FBI and a large number of federal agents.
Surrounding a cabin where a fugitive named Randy Weaver is holed up with his family.
The 11-day siege at a place called Ruby Ridge, Idaho. It happened before Waco, and for many, it's an even bigger rallying cry.
I want the truth!
The chaos in downtown Oklahoma City did indeed resemble Beirut after what police believe to be a 1,200-pound car bomb ripped through the 9-story federal building shortly after 9 o'clock this morning. More than 500 people were already in their offices, and at least 50 children were in a daycare center on the second floor.
Bombing in Oklahoma City was an attack on innocent children and defenseless citizens.
Again, I was on television saying that bin Laden's a CIA asset and looks like he'll attack New York. Saying, call Washington, tell him to call off the attack.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm so glad that you could join us today for this Wednesday, July 25th, 2001 broadcast. Call the White House and tell them, we know the government's planning terrorism. We know Oklahoma City and World Trade Center was terrorism. We know the Joint Chiefs of Staff wanted to blow up airliners, Baltimore Sun. If you do it, we're going to blame you, because we know who's up to it. Or if you let some terrorist group do it, like the World Trade Center, we know who to blame. And you could save the planet. I'm calling it Operation Expose the Government Terror.
They used to run false flags when they had the presidency. And by the way, when Clinton ordered all that stuff, it was the beginning of the end of the deep state. They're going to have their dirty little foundation turds out there trying to pull something off, trying to trick people into a mass shooting. They got mentally ill wind-up toys, drugged up, probably in comas. Right now, they're going to turn back on and try to roll out in D.C. and in Virginia and probably places we didn't think of. But everybody's got to be on maximum alert right now in the next few weeks. would the trial of the president start Tuesday. There's no sure of it now. It's 100% the nasty Chi-Com-funded anti-American trash is making its move on America. And we could kick the hell out of the British Empire, never been defeated, because it was our country and they were pushing us around and they knew we were in the right. They didn't have the providence or the will or the discernment or the bill of the deed. That was the old globalist empire in control of that. And those were people fleeing England and Scotland and Ireland and Germany and the Netherlands to come here and build a new Atlantis. Didn't mean they were perfect angels, but they believed in humanity. They believed in getting rid of feudalism. They believed in getting rid of slavery. They believed in empowering their fellow humans. And it was that idea that so threatens the Satanist. Satanists claim they're all about the individual and empowerment. They're all about selfishness.
All right. That gave you some historical context, I believe, to the bottom line. I think that was a great summation. If this were a jury trial or if this were a trial in a courtroom where we could bring in an exhibit, for example, that would be certainly well worth the eyes of the jury and ears of the jury to see this historical context from Lyndon Baines Johnson, Gulf of Tonkin, to, well, right through Ruby Ridge, Waco, Oklahoma City, the Twin Towers, you know, the 2001. And so on. And even to today, where you saw contemporaneously, you saw the communist approach against you and I and the foot soldiers out there. Folks, you're listening to the Hagmann Report. It is the 28th day of January, Tuesday, 2020. Going to be right back. Stay right where you're at.
Mainstream media won't. You're listening to the Hagmann and Hagmann Report on the Global Star Radio Network.
Exposing the New World Order, you're listening to the Hagmann and Hagmann Report.
You know, I want to just say thank you to Eric the Tech. He's a great tech, and he helps me a lot. He's actually my son-in-law, married to my daughter Jackie, and I appreciate everything he does. So here, let's give it up. Here, let's clap for Eric the Tech. All right, studio audience, everyone's just standing up, giving him a standing ovation. There was also a comment, Eric, I don't know whether you saw this or not, a comment on our YouTube channel saying, Eric the Tech's got a great father-in-law. There it is. Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for saying that. By the way, speaking about YouTube channels, we're still on YouTube right now. We haven't been taken off. So if you don't mind, please go over there and hit the subscribe and like button, but definitely subscribe to our YouTube channel, please, the official Hagman Report on YouTube. We really do appreciate that. And that plays with the algorithms. If they want to play with us, we'll play with them. So subscribe on our YouTube channel. Although go to HagmanReportLive.com and there you can see all of our videos and audio. All right. A couple of things before I get back to the programming. If you haven't tried this already, oh my goodness, try Hagman Coffee. We've got three types of coffee: Patriot, Revolution, and Detective's Choice. The Patriot blend is fabulous. The Revolution blend. Hey, you want a revolution? Well, you need some coffee for it. There it is. It comes in K cups. Ready? K cups, ground, and whole bean. Now, everyone says they've got the best tasting coffee. I stand by mine. I actually was involved in the taste testing process. I think it burned out my taste buds, but, I don't know, 40, 50 different combinations of coffee beans, but these are the best source beans ever. We've got a terrific roaster and, the roasting, it's all in the roasting. 4 days, 3 days, 4 days from the roaster to your door. That's our goal. And it's always fresh when you get it. The Detective's Choice is hyper-caffeinated. That's my go-to. And, of course, we also have these. See these? These are mugs. That's right, mugs, coffee mugs. Do you realize these are expensive? I mean, we just offer these as kind of a, you know, because you've asked for them. But we I don't know, maybe the profit's like a buck. I mean, by the time the production and shipping and all that, it's really, but anyway, I like them. I need the bean. I need the bean. That's my saying. I need the bean. All right. So HagmanStore.com. Please go there. And proceeds go to legitimate organizations. I could talk all day long on the, on this, because there are so many fake organizations out there that people are actually following. They believe in. I don't know about delusion. My goodness. But let's forget about that. And let's just say legitimate organizations who help children. Child sex trafficking and human trafficking, Vets for Child Rescue, and Russ Dizdar, Shatter unit as well, ShatterTheDarkness.net. So Vets for Child Rescue, I believe. Look, I spent a lot of time with Craig Sawyer. That man is amazing. His organization is amazing. And he does a lot on the ground, boots on the ground, both groups boots on the ground. So the proceeds go to those two organizations. That's right. And, you know, I want to tell you, the holidays are over. It's a brand new year now, 2020. Folks, if you're thinking about the high interest card rates, the high interest cards that you used over the holidays and the bills that will be coming, I got an idea that'll ease your mind. Take advantage of this. Pay off your credit card balances and save with a credit card consolidation loan from LightStream. I'm telling you, this is a great idea. You can roll multiple credit card payments into just one payment at a lower fixed rate. LightStream's credit card consolidation loans have rates as low as 5.95% APR with auto pay. You can't beat that. I mean, look, the national average interest rate, as far as I could tell, it's over 20%. Plus, with LightStream, there are absolutely no fees, no application charges, no fees, no origination fees, no transaction fees, no prepayment penalties. And you know what? The application, that process is so quick and easy. You can apply right from your phone. LightStream believes that people with good credit deserve a much better loan experience. And that's exactly what they deliver. Here's what you need to know. Here's what you need to do. Look on the screen. Okay, by the way, there it is on the screen. Just for listeners to the Hagman Report, apply now to get a special interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Hagman. I'm going to literally spell it out for you. It is LightStream, lightstream.com/Hagman. Remember, two N's on Hagman. And by the way, this is subject to credit approval. Rate includes 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Hagman for more information. You will thank me later. I know you will. All right. Yeah. Remember that detective program, Monk? You'll thank me later. It's a blessing and a curse. I love that. Tony Shalhoub as Monk. It was funny show. All right. I know I'm intentionally pleasing or taunting and torturing the commenter on YouTube is, get to the point, Columbo. It's my style. Deal with it. All right. So coming out of the gate, the bottom line, they want you dead. You saw two video clips, both from Band Video, Band.video. And by the way, I urge everyone to go there and bookmark that website, Band.video, BANNED.video. The reason I say that, that's InfoWars channel. And they've got a lot of great information. And my friends at InfoWars there are, in my view, are breaking some even new ground as we speak. All right, now. I want to jump in here real quick before I finish this hour out with some political news. You and I, we have, of course, we know we talked about Virginia. Are you aware what's going on in Virginia? Despite the tens of thousands of people who showed up and made their desires known that, look, you're not going to take our guns. You're not going to violate the Constitution. Well, six more gun control measures are on track to pass in Virginia. And they're saving the most radical, intensely radical legislation for last. Virginia right now is on track to pass six more gun control measures very soon. Now, after the left, the Democratic left, took over Virginia earlier this month, just a week and a half ago, they first passed three gun control bills. But the most controversial bill that would redefine and ban what they describe as assault weapons was shot down, but a nearly identical bill still exists. Then the day after, tens of thousands of people showed up at Richmond to protest these draconian measures. Virginia passed the red flag law. Red flag laws can be, in my view, I know the theory behind it, and I know even the most innocuous intent behind this, but they can be abused. Well, six more gun control bills are on their way. Here's a list. Ready? House Bill 2, House Bill 335. These two are closely related. They are both universal background check bills that criminalize the private transfer of firearms, with just a few exceptions. Most common transfers between friends and neighbors are not exempted. So House Bill 2 and House Bill 335. Next is House Bill 9. That's the lost or stolen bill that turns gun owners into criminals if they don't report a lost or stolen firearm within 24 hours of discovering them missing by finding them. They'll find them. Supposedly, this is supposed to cut down on straw purchases. If you think about it, I'm not going to explain it to you. If you don't know, you can understand this. But explain to me how that would work in practice. I mean, I got the theory, but in practice, no. But that's House Bill 9. House Bill 421, that permits local government to enact their own gun control ordinances, which would likely result in the restrictive and unconstitutional policies being adopted in Northern Virginia and other Democratic strongholds of the state. Now, remember, Virginia is a Dillon's rule state, meaning that, well, that the state legislature has all power over the counties and municipalities. That's Dillon's rules, all right? In this case, what they're saying, that was convenient for them to say the sanctuary city law, no, you can't do that. It was convenient for them to say we are Dillon's rural estate, so you can't, it's unlawful for you to declare yourself as a sanctuary county. But yet in this case, what are they doing? House Bill 421 says, hey, local governments, you can enact your own laws as long as they're restrictive to gun control. That's House Bill 421. Then there's three, again, closely related bills. House Bill 72, House Bill 463, and House Bill 1083. So let me say that again. House Bill 72, House Bill 463, and House Bill 1083. These severely restrict parental decisions about firearms in the home. You violate these, I'll tell you what, you better whip out your checkbook and have an attorney on speed dial. So what am I talking about? Well, under these specific rules, it would be a crime for a parent to allow their 16-year-old to hunt on the family property without direct adult supervision. Or, hey, for parents to allow their 17-year-old daughter to access a firearm for self-defense when she was home alone. In other words, you can't, as a dad or a mom or as a family, say, hey, Melissa, my 17-year-old daughter, I know you're mature and everything. We're going to go out. Mom and dad are going to go out and see a movie. Now, I know that there's, you know, roving gangs of people out there and, you know, or whatever. Despite the threats, I can't leave you that gun that we have used, you know, for self-defense because you're only 17. So I'm going to have to lock up that gun for fear of being, you know, charged. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. You get the idea. House Bill 674, it's another red flag type of law that allows the seizure of an individual's firearms based on a low standard of review and without any opportunity for the subject of this extreme risk order to be present. So in other words, this can be decided outside of your presence. Two more, very closely related, House Bill 812 and House Bill 1502. These are gun rationing bills that limit an individual's ability to purchase a handgun to one every 30 days. I saw this on that sewage site, Democratic Underground, where, you know, well, who would need to buy more than one firearm per month? Well, you know what? It's none of your flipping business, number one. And if we, who are you to tell me I can't? That's the question. Don't, you know, what, you're all about civil liberties, right? Or supposed to be, but yet I can't buy, if I want to buy more than one gun in a 30-day period, oh my gosh, that's, you don't need to do that. Don't tell me what I need to do. You just shut up and sit down. You know, passing this legislation is easy, isn't it? You know what's going to be hard? Enforcing it. You want my guns? You want my guns and ammo? Ammo comes first. It's kind of like being a father of a daughter who's coming of age and starting to date, and the dad tosses out a shotgun shell to that, to his princess daughter, to her date. And the date catches the shotgun shell and looks at the dad and says, what? And the father says, have her home by 11 because the next one is going to come a hell of a lot faster. To those parents, daughters out there, you know what I mean, right? All right. Okay, so a couple of other things. Again, sticking with that end game or the bottom line here is in fact that, they want us dead. The gun laws, what are they doing? That's a template. What's happening in Virginia is a template for other states. You know that. They cannot successfully take over a country. They can't subjugate us if we are still armed. It's not about hunting. It's not about anything. It's about the government subjugating us because they can't when we're armed. Or it makes it a heck of a lot harder. So they need to disarm us. It's more than Virginia. It's every state. We have to say no at every turn. And they're going to pass this legislation, but how dare they try to enforce it? Because the moment that they do, it's going to be a whole different story, I guarantee you. And I would ask you, leave me a comment and see, tell me what you think. Do you think that they, once passed, do you believe that there is an enforcement capability I don't know. Do you notice I've gone pretty much the entire hour here without necessarily mentioning, at least in depth, the coronavirus, referenced it only but not mentioning it. Coronavirus, of course, earlier on I asked whether, you know, it could be weaponized and kind of tempered everything down to take a look at evidence as opposed to, you know, hyperbole. But only in the context, at least at that time, initially, in the context of this fake news meme, using Event 201 as the platform, and of course that video by Band.video by InfoWars. I want to stick with the guns just for one more time, or for a little bit more first. Because Daniel Horowitz had written about, there was a shooting in Seattle. I don't know how many people saw this. The headline by Daniel Horowitz, Seattle commuter shooting, nearly 70 prior arrests among three suspects. Last week there was a shooting. I don't know how many people saw or heard about this, at one downtown Seattle's busiest street corners. And it was barely covered by the media. There were about 75 opportunities to do something to prevent the murder. As with the case of almost every major city shooting that you don't hear about in the media. Yet this was one more example of the need for criminal control, not gun control, but criminal control as a more effective public safety tool. So last Wednesday night, right around rush hour, gunfire erupted on a busy Seattle street near a bus stop with numerous commuters and pedestrians nearby. One person was killed and seven were wounded, including a 9-year-old boy. Well, this wasn't the typical gang fight. Okay, this wasn't the typical thing with gangs that erupted in a bad neighborhood. All right. Two Amazon workers, by the way, were shot. Now, the suspects, Marquise Latrell Tolbert, 24, William Ray Tolliver, 24, and Jamel Leon or Lionel Jackson, 21. Tolbert and Tolliver, they're on the run. Jackson is in custody of local police. Here's where it gets interesting. Tolliver has at least 44 prior arrests. 44! And 20 convictions for offenses, including unlawful possession of firearm, theft, malicious mischief, on and on and on, right? 44 prior arrests. William Ray Tolliver. Well, Marquise Latrell Tolbert has over 20 arrests and 15 convictions. Robbery, possession of a stolen vehicle, discharging a firearm, and so on. Theft, harassment. Both of these mopes were arrested back in 2018 for a drive-by shooting and weapons violation, but never served time in prison. Now, police believe that they are both members of a local gang. Now, you notice I mentioned two of them. What about Jamel Jackson? Now, according to KIRO, he had a prior robbery conviction and two prior convictions for unlawful handgun possession. Yes, it was 100% illegal. Did you get that? For him to own or possess, have on his person a gun? But he was caught on camera with a gun at the scene of this crime. He has barely served any time in prison. And according to court records, just 4 months of work release. That was in 2017. And even after this incident, he's only being held on a $50,000 bond. In a case back in 2017, police charged that he was a gang member and was likely to commit a violent offense. So here we have three suspects with a total of nearly 70 prior arrests, including arrests and charges for and convictions for violent offenses. Guns. But Washington State is notorious for criminal justice reform. Anytime you hear that reform word, oh. And they've got an egregious record for releasing both violent domestic criminals and violent illegal invaders here unlawfully. And Washington is also one of the states that's weakening its three strikes law under law, the under that law, those convicted of three violent crimes are supposed to serve time for life. But the governor there in Washington has been consistently granting clemency to the most violent of criminals. So there you have it. And it's interesting because this, what I just relate to you there, this is the story of almost every shooting and violent crime in America. There have been 943,591 homicides in America from 1996 through 2018. Let me give you that number again. 943,591 homicides between 1966 and 2018. Again, between 1966 and 2018. Do you realize that a study of those statistics show that almost all of those are, all of those, shootings, the homicides have been committed by known criminals who are let back on the streets? Very, 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 very few are committed with what are known as assault weapons, assault rifles. So it stands to reason that if we just locked up the felons, you'd have more people alive today. But instead, the very people who want gun control are the ones who think that a system that already fails to confine violent gangs, gun felons, and such is just too punitive. Why did I even bring this up? They want you dead. They want you disarmed. I played, Eric played two videos from Band Video earlier. Fake news, weaponized system. They want to, of course, take away the protection under the Communication Decency Act of 230. The issue of fake news was brought up in conjunction with or at the same time as Event 201, which means that that, of course, was about the release of a coronavirus back in October of 2000 or October of 2019. All of these, I believe, are fronts and morsels and bits of a bigger puzzle, with the bottom line is they want us dead. Lastly, President Trump stands in the way. He stands in the way of a number of things. The Hillary Obama agenda, I believe, is one that we have to look at and say, well, Hillary was supposed to be in for 8 years instead of not Donald Trump. But by the way, there's an article in American Thinker where the title is "Hold On to Your Hats." Hillary says she's got the urge to run again. Hillary, don't count her out of the picture. A lot of these deep state actors are still in the picture and are actively moving toward silencing us. Just want to tell you that. Because why? Because they want us dead. But they've got to silence us first. Maybe weaponize a virus. Maybe tossing something out, taking away our guns while pushing more violent crimes into our cities, opening the borders. I mean, there's so many aspects to this. There's a hint of good news, and I'm going to close with this. I don't know. I know that Keith Hansen talked about this in his show last night. You heard about the public charge ruling, the Supreme Court public charge ruling. Well, Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch has warned judicial activists that he's coming for them. I'm telling you, keep your eye on this. This is good. The question is the era of this judicial activism where one judge can put the stick in the bicycle spokes, could stop, you know, somebody from moving forward, could stop President Trump. Is that era over? Well, it just might be. Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch, in a ruling about denying green cards to migrants who come here to be public charges, something that is absolutely clear and plainly laid out in U.S. law as illegal. Well, he threw a special warning to activist judges all on the left who have been ruling from the bench have been, legislating from the bench as activists. This Supreme Court decision just happened this week, the 5-4 decision. In addition to this 5-4 decision allowing the rule to go into effect, Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch said he issued another concurring opinion warning judicial activists and rebuking activist judges and their rush to apply nationwide injunctions against President Trump's administrative policies. What I'm telling you is there's finally now a Supreme Court, at least in this current configuration, and this is the good news, that is standing up to these judicial activists who are allowing this illegal invasion to take place, who are allowing these illegal gun, anti-Second Amendment laws to be passed and these crazy things. Now the complexion of the Supreme Court is suddenly different. And we saw that in this ruling, practically different. We saw this in the ruling about the public charters with a concurring opinion by Neil Gorsuch saying, hey, you know what, Mr. Judge, Mrs. Judge, you can't be doing this. You cannot be legislating from the bench. You cannot be throwing your ideological, political bias into the rulings and stopping a president, stopping whatever, because it's not lawful. That's the good news. So, despite the fact that they want us dead, that's the news. As I end, the good news is, hey, we have some hope. In this case, that hope is through the Supreme Court. There's more. There's more good news coming. Next hour, Stan Dale from standale.com. Going to join me, talk about a number of things. Stay right where you're at. Going to be right back. Hagman Report.
Listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report on the Global Star Radio Network. Exposing the New World Order, you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report on the Global Star Radio Network. Stand by. Doug and Joe will be back shortly.
Welcome back to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report, HagmanReportLive.com. That's where you can find our videos, audio, HagmanReport.com for other matters. Also, HagmanStore.com, HagmanStore.com. Make sure you bookmark that. And that's where you can get coffee, that proceeds of which are used to help in the fight. Boots on the ground fight, not some willy-nilly you know, thing, but boots on the ground fight in the fight against child trafficking. That's fantastic. I'll tell you what, the gourmet coffee. It's three types of coffee, Detective's Choice, Patriot Blend, and Revolution Blend. For the detectives in you, in me, moms out there with moms and dads who are raising teenagers, you need to question them and keep an eye on them, and that's for you. It's hyper-caffeinated. Detective's Choice, my favorite, my go-to. But, as well, sometimes I'm in the mood for a little revolution, and sometimes I feel like a patriot. All the time I feel like a patriot. Other choices as well. Three choices. And by the way, you can get them in K-cups, ground, or whole bean. I need the bean. As well, mugs as well. Eric the Tech designed these mugs. What do you think, guys? Ladies? Huh? Pretty cool. I need the bean. It's got a Hagman coffee on the front. I need the bean on the back. They're fun to have, fun to share. HagmanStore.com. All right. Boy, you know, I'm glad that Stan Deo is with us today. I want to ask him first out if he's okay with this, by the way. If not, then we can move on to another topic. But I want to ask him his thoughts on this potential pandemic, the coronavirus, what he thinks. Because he always weighs in with some pretty doggone good analysis. Stan, how are you, sir?
Very good. It's an exciting day in the news we've seen this morning or earlier today. On the coronavirus thing, it certainly looks like it's fulfilling or starting to fulfill prophecy about, plagues, pandemics, pestilence in this age, right before the judgments start or during the early start of the judgments in the tribulation period. One guy called us just this morning and emailed me about finding a U.S. patent for the coronavirus. Now, have you checked that out yourself?
Yes, I have. And yes, it exists. And I was on the phone this past weekend with a doctor, a medical doctor I know. Her and others have said, her by implication, but others by direct reference, that patenting viruses, it's done and it's not done for anything necessarily nefarious, but it's, you just kind of keep an eye on it kind of thing. It's up to you. I mean, but yes, it is patented, as is the alleged vaccine for that virus strain.
So we have a patent for this thing, yes. And it's somehow found its way over to China,
yes,
which is rather interesting. I wonder, with the developments that are transpiring in the Middle East with the Trump peace plan, if China is going to join with Russia and perhaps Iran to come after the United States. I mean, if they've got this virus and it's one that we invented or patented, and if they've got this virus and it's killing a lot of their people and may kill a lot more, then the pressure on the Chinese government may be such that they will take action against the United States. I don't know, but these are the thoughts that run around my mind when I see this kind of stuff happening.
Well, very similar to what you just said there, a listener, Deborah Kay, I won't give her full name, she wrote this to me, which, again, is very close to what your line of thinking. She said in an email, she said, do you think that the timing of the recent phase one of the China agreement and the coronavirus starting about the same time is just a coincidence? Now, she's referring to the trade agreement, and they mentioned the Chinese New Year celebrations in it as well. Maybe some of the deep state, they don't want the agreement. It just seems odd to me that within days, chaos with this virus or whatever chemical warfare it is. And so it kind of goes to what you were saying as well. Maybe there's a different motive behind this, or maybe there's a motive period behind this.
It's a very complex issue, and it's not just limited to the Middle East, and the Arab countries and Israel. This is a global situation, which, is prophetic, I think, prophetic fulfillment.
I do too.
Couple things. Let's start with slide 59 today on my show images page.
All right.
You can get to that from standao.com and going over to show images under the microphone there. The slide 59 talks about an American that was killed and apparently some kind of a missile attack from the Taliban over Afghanistan. Now, the guy's name is Michael D'Andrea, and he was the head of U.S. intelligence operations against Iraq, Iran, and Afghanistan. Now, they killed him, shot him down, and the Iranians are claiming that this was done because he was the guy that pushed the button on Qasem Soleimani and killed him, so they're retaliating with that. But I do not think this is going to stop there with downing this guy that pushed the button. They're going to go further. The Iranians, you know, have a long memory, and they don't forgive easily. So,
wow, I didn't see that. I'm glad you found that. Okay.
That's spooky. I mean, yeah. That's telling you they haven't gone to sleep, and they're coming after us, and that's just over there. In keeping with that, slide 60, yeah, it says U.S. builds several bases in northeast Iraq. Now, the reason they've done that is to put a buffer where they can put troops, and that might be where part of the 3,500 troops that are heading over that we are going, I don't know, but this is a forward operating base like that was the standard in Iraq in the old days when we were fighting, what's his name, Hussein, what do you call him? Well, who was the leader there? That we threw
Saddam Hussein? You talking
about? Saddam. Couldn't Greg is first name up at the moment here. My mind is getting tired these days. Too many things to remember.
Isn't this something? And you know, I feel for you, my man. I do. I feel for you. It's just, it's fatigue. It's headline. It's mental road rash.
Well, Holly and I, you know, in the evening sometime during when she's getting news here during the day, we'll say, that story, that guy that was in the story where the thing blew up and, that one. Yeah. She was like, yeah, that one. Yeah. And about a minute or two later, one of us will remember what the heck we're talking about. Oh, gosh.
I know exactly of what you speak. Yes.
Anyway, Saddam Hussein's place there. Well, we use the same tactics there with forward operating bases to defeat him. Boy, what is happening to my screen here? Oh, that's weird. I see what's happening. Or, sorry, I had my finger on a button I shouldn't have had, and the whole screen was going crazy. So that's slide 59 and 60. The slide 56, I mentioned this in passing, but they are putting 3,500 more troops from the Fort Bragg 82nd Division, Airborne Division, in the Middle East. Where they're going, you know, and details of it, I'm not exactly sure, but because they're putting it over there, if Trump's putting it over there, you can expect there's going to be some kind of military action, or they're expecting it probably from Iran. It's not over yet, guys, and Trump knows that. So that's why he's putting these guys over there to be on the ground to retaliate or to defend the area. So, you know, we have to thank these guys for their service ahead of time. They're going into a war zone for sure.
Yeah. I didn't realize. So 3,500 more troops from Fort Bragg, the 82nd Airborne, they're going to the Middle East. Wow. Okay.
Sneaks up on us, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Now, this I'm kind of concerned about Mohammed bin Salman at the moment. In slide 52, it shows that Boris Johnson's phone was hacked by Mohammed bin Salman. And then slide 47, you see that Jeff Bezos' phone was hacked by Mohammed bin Salman. These are two serious hacks. I mean, the Prime Minister of Israel and the guy that owns Amazon and one of the richest guys on the planet. What is Mohammed bin Salman up to? He's also had his foreign minister. Let's see if I can figure his picture there up in slide 57. The foreign minister says that Israeli citizens are not allowed to come to the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia despite the Israeli decision to permit such trips. So Israel's trying to do the right thing and saying, okay, we'll let your guys, you know, come over to our country, the Saudis into Israel, and Israel's quite willing to let our people go over to your country to do jihad or whatever, you know, the Muslims in Israel. And so the foreign minister there in Saudi Arabia is saying, no, we're not permitting that. It didn't say kind of not yet, but he's not doing it. And he wouldn't do that without the permission or the direction of Mohammed bin Salman, the prince there.
I thought this was just changed. I thought, and correct me, but I thought that this particular issue was just this policy. I don't know what you would describe it. Was just changed because the Israeli. So if you had a passport and you had an Israeli stamp, that's why they not a stamp, but a stamp in there. You couldn't enter Saudi Arabia, and I thought that that was changed, but apparently now, according to your news, is saying no, it's they're doubling down as opposed to changing.
This is from Israeli National News today. Yeah. So this is, I've been expecting some strange behavior from Mohammed bin Salman if he's going to be the Antichrist of this age, and whether it's him or whether. You know, Soleimani may come back from the dead using a body double or whatever. The two of them, I'm still watching both of them. They're on both sides of the Muslim world, you know, Shiite and Sunni. Shiite being the Soleimani and the Iranians, and Sunni being the Arabians under Prince bin Salman. Mm. He's a prince. And if he ratifies this agreement that was made this morning with Israel and a number of nations, the Palestinians, they think are going to come to the party on this and agree to that peace plan in the Middle East that Trump and Netanyahu and Jared Kushner have put together. Now, Saudi Arabians were aware of this. The Jordanians were aware of it and not happy about having to let Israel annex the Jordan Valley. But Israel needs that as a buffer zone to stop attacks coming from Jordan itself even. When you put these factors together, MBS may ratify that treaty. He may sign the treaty and say, yeah, I agree to it, but he's going to turn around and betray Israel. So these little small signs where, okay, Israelis aren't allowed to come here on their passport yet to Saudi Arabia, that tells you that something is being held back by the Saudis. And I am concerned about that.
Wow.
I guess you watched this morning. Did you watch a chance to get the details of the press conference that Trump held with Netanyahu on this peace treaty?
No, I didn't see that. And I was otherwise.
You'll probably get.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can see it later on the replays this evening. But it was, you know, I just had a chance to look at it here before we went on air. And I was quite impressed with the reception that Trump and Netanyahu got there. The Israeli elections are coming in March, and Netanyahu is, you know, still under threat from Gantz, G-A-N-T-Z, from the Blue and White Party, who they're neck and neck for being the Prime Minister of Israel. Now, this peace agreement has come ahead of time, you know, ahead of the election. So President Trump invited Gantz to come over with Prime Minister Netanyahu to discuss this peace treaty. And Gantz agreed, yeah, okay, I'll come on over there, but I'm going to bring with me, you know, as a kind of backup, one of my guys. And the guy that he's bringing over with him hates Donald Trump and has made it public. So that must have been an interesting meeting because Gantz said he would meet with President Trump alone, but not be in the same room with Netanyahu. So on the stand, I saw on the news thing there that Netanyahu was with President Trump making the announcement of the peace plan and everything. But Gantz was nowhere present. He just would not appear in the same room, you know, as being, you know, a friend or even close to Netanyahu, which is telling us that the divide in Israel is kind of like it is here with the impeachment things in progress. What an incredible time this is.
Yeah, I would definitely would say. How would you describe Gantz? I mean, how would you – you had mentioned, you know, similar to the divide here – with respect to Israeli politics, would he be considered a, well, how would you describe him?
What, a hawk, you mean, or something?
Yes. I mean, would he be in line, like, in line with a Bernie Sanders kind of guy, or a, maybe that's an unfair comparison.
Well, he's a leftist, you know, leftist center as far as hawkishness, but he's former IDF commander. So, you know, he's got a military background. You'd think, well, goodness gracious, if anybody knew what the threat to Israel was,
yeah,
what they need to do, he would be the one. But for some reason, I mean, there's this great divide between him and Netanyahu. And I would put Netanyahu on the right wing side, you know, the conservative side of Israeli government, and Gantz on the left side.
Okay.
And Gantz to form the coalition he needs to take over the prime minister's spot is going to be forced to take over some Arab terrorist type related to small factions within Israel. And this is a great concern. Personally, I hope he doesn't get rid of Netanyahu or doesn't kick him out of office. Anyway,
This is so the tinder is so dry. We're definitely living in my view anyway, in times that have been spelled out in the Bible, very prophetic times in a number of all of the headlines, it seems.
So, now Holly and I both have found articles in the last couple of days on Mahmoud Abbas, you know, for the Palestinians, In one article I put up there, and she's put up others over on our site in the last couple of days, on slide 55 it says, what is the most important thing for Palestinians to focus on? This is from the article. If you click on the text, you'll get to it. It says, undoubtedly, a plan that gives Palestinians and Israelis peace of mind and security and safety. Peace and safety.
Peace and safety.
Now, when they shall cry out peace and safety, sudden destruction is upon them. And I thought about this. I thought, right. Okay, so suppose, all right, they will say this, peace and safety, finally, the Palestinians, the Israelis, when this peace treaty is signed, agreed between them and the various factions that will sign the treaty, and if Mohammed bin Salman is the Antichrist, he will ratify this treaty, he will sign it, you know, he will say, yeah, I agree with that, it's a good treaty, then will he turn suddenly and attack Israel and and Iran, because he hates Iran too, but is he going to make his military moves right after he signed that treaty, like Daniel says, the prophet Daniel? It just the things are lining up so incredibly fast. I'm astounded to see this in print. I mean, anybody that does biblical prophecies probably doesn't their jaw drop at the moment. We are watching history be made today.
You know, I find it interesting. Here we are in the year 2020. Often, indicating a perfect vision, 2020 vision. And here we are, year 2020, and looking at everything that's taking place through the prism of biblical prophecy. Is this something like your article in slide 55, peace and safety? I mean, that's pretty clear. But all of in the totality of articles, are we going to have 2020 vision when it comes to the identification of where we're at in the timeline, or where we're at with the headlines versus the prophecy, the prophetic prophecies? Are we going to know? Are we going to be able to say, yeah, that's it? You know, I guarantee you, that's it. Peace and safety. That's peace and safety. It matches it perfectly. Are we going to have that 2020 vision? I guess is one of my question is. Are we?
Yeah, I believe we will, but I don't believe for the Christians that are going to be caught up in the rapture, which I believe in.
Right.
They will not see the Antichrist revealed. They will be gone before that happens.
Okay.
And if this happens, sometime soon, I expect that. It says that the dead shall rise first, and then those who are still alive will be caught up to be with those that have been raised up from the dead to meet with the Lord, Yeshua, in the heavens.
Right.
Now, okay, does that mean, I wonder, will we also, among the signs, see dead people walking around, that their spirits or something, or will we even see that, are people on the earth? Will it happen so quickly that they'll be raised, bang, gone, and we're with them that are going to be in the bride? Hopefully that's us. And bang, we're gone, and our bodies drop down, not being used anymore. I don't know, but I'm pretty certain that for those that are going to be members of the bride and caught up in the rapture, that they will not be on earth when the Antichrist is revealed, which is why I put a number of possibilities on slide 13 for potential candidates for the Antichrist, in my opinion, based on Scripture. And, perhaps people that come after the rapture will look at that and say, oh, well, this was one that Deo picked out. Yeah, I understand that now. He's the bad guy. I better get my Bible and see what's happening now. So that's kind of why I put that up. Not to be naming him exactly.
And I think this is good. Regardless of what your belief structure is about this issue, if you can study it beforehand, or those who are left here can study it in the way it was intended. So thank you. I mean, it's okay. Yeah, this is very interesting. And boy, you're so right. The convergence of events. And you know, even the people who are the most secular of the people, they're starting to talk about stuff like this. And I find it amazing. I was listening to John Haller. I'm not sure if you know him. He's the head of the Fellowship Bible Chapel. I've met him a few times. He's an attorney, but he's also a pastor. And he was talking about even the people within the secular venues are starting to say, wait a minute, you know, there's something going on here that's prophetic, you know, of biblical proportions. So, you know, our efforts are not for naught.
I think that, you know, there will be people, I'm sure, saved, get their heavenly license, if you wish, and be on, Jesus' team in the heavens later. That's not to bribe those that are caught up, I don't think, in the rapture, but during the tribulation period, there will be many people saved by the Jewish evangelists, 144,000 that are sealed by God to witness about God's, you know, presence and purpose and involvement in human affairs. So, we need to talk to or lay information out for those who are left behind to deal with the tribulation period and the judgments that will come at the end of that, to explain to them what is happening. Because as I understand scripture, it's going to be such a chaotic time. And so many millions, billions of people will die from pestilence and war and stuff during that period, that those that are survivors in that period of time or undergoing it before they die will look for answers desperately. And somewhere out there in the internet, your shows and my stuff, the Show Images page and things that we talk about and others that try to wake up the people will be available somewhere out there. People have saved it. So we're doing a witness in the middle of the tribulation, but before it happens.
I like that. Yes.
Yeah.
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 It's good to think about. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
But by the way, looking at the Show Images page, no wonder you're tired. I mean, my goodness. Oh my goodness. All of these events taking place.
Yeah. And I do take time out to look at news on scientific things that I find interesting and, things that Holly sometimes finds that I've missed. And she says, what do you think about this? And, oh, wow. Slide 51 is one of those, by the way. Okay. When you have solar cells, you know, for solar energy collectors to make, you know, backup power for your home or save you energy and that kind of stuff, you use silicon-based solar cells. Now, or solar panels, you know, with solar cells in it. Now, they collect a certain very narrow bandwidth of sunlight, and primarily it's in the infrared spectrum. But they have found a molecule that will collect all of the various wavelengths, not just that narrow band that works on the silicon cells, but it'll collect all of the bands and turn them into electricity, which they're saying in the article then be used to separate hydrogen from water, you know, and make a hydrogen fuel that could be used in our vehicles and stuff. But also it means that if you have a cell made out of this new molecule, then, you know, you'll get more energy. The efficiency will be really excellent. And more so than what we've got now. Because, I mean, the sun has even put out since 1992 two new ultraviolet spectrum, you know, rays in the ultraviolet spectrum. So ultraviolet and infrared and this whole range of frequencies allows us to collect a lot more energy from, you know, solar radiation. It's not just, you know, sunlight that you can see, but from the invisible, you know, the UV thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there are things that are visible, I guess, that are UV as well. That's why the sun looks a bit whiter at time because of the blue coming from the ultraviolet. It's 25 times more efficient than, you know, like the silicon cell things we've got now. So if you can get that much out, then, you know, happy days to us. Anyway, that's That's something they've been looking at. That's the holy grail of solar energy, is to figure out ways to get all of the frequencies harvested and turned into electricity with, you know, something like a photoelectric effect.
Right.
So this is an advancement that is, in my opinion, very neat. Now, slide 44. As I said earlier about up there at slide 59 about the Russian intelligence reporting that the Taliban had shot down the head of our CIA operations over there in the Middle East to get rid, you know, to get even about Qasem Soleimani's death. Mm-hmm. Then if you look at slide 44, it's talking about, you know, this is the Hill.com, which is here in the States, this report. It says Israeli missile attacks show the need for better defense abroad and at home as well. Because with the Saudis being attacked at the Aramco thing by drones that we didn't see or stop, and, you know, in Iraq, our base being hit by missiles from Iran, the like Iron Dome or like various types of defensive missile systems, they have what's called like a 120-degree detection field. So that you aim them in a certain place, and for 120 degrees, which is a little over 90, anything that moves in that area, the detection system will pick up, and you can try to bring it down with surface-to-air missiles, or air-to-air in some cases.
Right.
But if you're not looking where they're coming, if their scanners are looking here, or if they're looking there, and the missiles are coming from over, well, sorry, I'm trying to do it with my wrong hand, from over there. Anyway, from the other direction, right? These things get through the missile defense systems. And the United States is not totally protected against a number of these types of attacks. Drones can fly so low and stuff that sometimes you can't detect them. They can come in from offshore ships, you know, in international waters, and the drone can go skimming the water and over, and then suddenly it's there, and it's too late for us to get a missile to intercept. And that can be how an EMP attack is launched over the United States, which definitely cripples everything.
Yep.
It's not protected anyway with a shield. And a number of them can come in at low levels and blow up cities. You know, it's the limit of the radar systems. And so they have to have overlapping systems, you know, overlapping the 120 so you can get 360-degree scans. And right. there's a budget been approved for that, and they're trying to develop it here at home. But until that's in place, we're kind of naked out there. We're some of these new types of technology we can't detect and get them out of the way in time to save the homeland here where it hits. Mm-hmm. You know, things are being done in the background. As you know, my partner and I get to talk to the defense guys as part of business. And we are encouraged that things have been done and are still being done and will be done to try to harden the United States and our power infrastructure against the EMP attacks, which would mean they were just totally defenseless. And certainly a lot's been done to do that. So anyway, this is just another thing that we've got to put in the mix there to defend against offshore missiles getting through our limited radar scans.
By the way, speaking of your EMP shield, last week, I think it was last week, you announced that you had gotten, been awarded the patents for the EMP shield.
Yeah. Yeah.
Congratulations again. I saw a lot of great responses to that news. So congratulations again. And folks, EMP Shield, you know, we'll have the link in the program description box. But you know what, folks? You need to start thinking in terms of protecting your home, protecting your car. There it is, EMP Shield. Get the EMP protection. By the way, use Hagman as the promo code. Eric the Tech, tell me again what this is. I'll get that. I'm kidding.
Thank you.
It's empshield.com/Hagman for $50 off, or use promo code Hagman.
There you go. All right. So it's definitely a good idea, and a lot of people have been raving about that. But yeah, it's kind of neat that you've got the ability to talk with, Defense Department people, and, that's great. I'd like to.
Might be them calling.
Yeah, actually.
Please do not say, oh no, sorry, yeah, I know this. No, we've been very privileged in a lot of ways. I can't tell you publicly, but, our hard work is certainly being rewarded. And, well, anyway, the situation in the Middle East, which is going to come home to us pretty soon by the Iranians, is something that we've been preparing for behind the scenes for a long time. Anyway, yeah.
This has been brewing for decades, really. I mean, this Middle East situation, coming home to coming here to roost. I think it's like an overripened fruit. We're about ready to get hit, I think. So,
well, look, I think we're the modern Babylon. There's no question about it in my mind. We have this mix of tongues and nations and religions, and even though I agree with what President Trump is doing, you know, versus what the left would be doing with our country, I know that we're becoming a nation that is, you know, proud and somewhat boastful about all that we can do and have done. And pride goes before a fall. We've got to be humble and respect, you know, God. And I'm afraid that the majority of the country is not doing that at the moment. And as I've said before, Babylon gets destroyed in 1 hour. It's burned, right?
Yep.
And if America is Babylon of the modern age, then a solar event, which the revelation in John says, there will be a time when the light of the sun bursts up seven times brighter than it is. So that's going to fry that portion of the planet facing the sun at that time in 1 hour. You know, it says, will Babylon be destroyed by fire? And the rest of the planet, which is out in the shadow, would get, warmer weather and stuff and crazy chaotic weather and cyclones, and all kinds of stuff because of the heating of the atmosphere that gets hit on the side of the planet that's facing the sun when this flare, this coronal mass ejection, whatever it is, comes out through the solar system. And as it passes Earth, burns the crud out of the green trees and stuff, all burned to a crisp. And you know, the sea is boiled and the fish are killed on that side of the planet that's facing it. That's how one third of the planet can be destroyed, because that's about the surface area of the Earth that would be getting the direct radiation from the sun when that event happens. So that would explain how Babylon is destroyed and how America's not in the final roundup for, say, like the Armageddon battle, because America's not going to be there. It's going to be a solid ash.
Makes sense to me. If in fact, again, predicating upon the fact that we could be Babylon, yes, America could be, yeah.
I know in reading some of the Greek about, Jesus is saying, come out of her, my people, you know, come up out of, in fact, in the Greek, it's saying not just come out of Babylon, but it says come up out of Babylon, that you're not partakers of her sins nor of her judgments. And when you look at it that way, the rapture is probably how his people, the bride, I guess, is caught up out of Babylon before Babylon is destroyed. So that's a little bit of comfort to people that might be worrying about that solar flare.
Interesting.
I'm just full of interesting little side thoughts.
Yeah, thinking about that, I guess, there's different ways you can kind of think about things. And okay.
Where are we here? Slide 43. The Taal volcano that we were all concerned was going to suddenly do an even bigger eruption than it just did.
Right.
The reports are showing that the volcanic action has slowed down, and the earthquake tremors have slowed down. And so when you read the report, they're saying, well, okay, the official threat of another massive eruption by Taal is, you know, it's over. Don't worry about it. The alert level's been dropped. But those eruptions there in Taal, as I discussed last week, were steam-driven or freomagmatic eruptions, which are explosive like crazy because water gets dumped into a hot bed of magma and explodes. I mean, you can understand how that happens. And if it's really, really hot magma, it gives you a double whammy on the steam explosion. It's a physics thing that makes the explosion more violent when it happens at a sudden temperature where water is dumped into this hot mix. Anyway, they're saying that although they say that, for now the alert level is set to lower now, they're saying, however, this could surprise us and suddenly be a super volcano all over again. So it's because they don't understand what, you know, how the volcanoes work. You know, no one does at that moment how to predict volcanic eruptions exactly. And so it's on one hand saying, okay, it's over now. You know, you can go back home and everything's fine. Unless, of course, we're wrong and we're surprised by a major explosive eruption. So that's give and take with the left and the right hand, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, we could, you know, unless we're wrong.
It's okay.
Yeah. Wow. All right.
Yeah. I think that should be a codicil to most things that scientists say, because we're just kind of trying by discovery to know how the universe works and how our planet works. And we're certainly not the architect of the planet. So,
right.
Yeah.
That's, I don't know why that struck me so funny, but I guess it's about right. Okay.
Yeah. Now the, King Solomon's Mines, slide 46. Now I saw the documentary on this, and then this news article came up on the 24th about, they think that they've found copper mines, you know, in, Israel, in an area in Edom, where that they thought that maybe Solomon got his gold and all his, you know, precious metals and things like that. Now, I'm sure he could have used that for some of the precious metals and things. But if you read the scripture, and I've had this in my DVD series on Solomon's gold, or Solomon, you know, and the Antichrist, I talked about where Solomon's gold mines were located. I did it in the Garden of Eden, a dissertation as well. Just because I was studying clues in the Bible as to where the Garden of Eden would be and things like that, I ran across the sources, the three major sources for the gold, the 666 talent weight of gold that King Solomon got every year from his various, you know, mining endeavors. Now, one of them was in India, in the Indus River Valley and south of there in the Karnataka region. And I tracked that down because one of the the kind of unknown sources of gold, one of these gold mine things, was in a place called Parvaim in the Hebrew, Parvaim. And that's a plural form of something in Hebrew. And there's no word, you know, no definition in Hebrew of the word parva, much less Parvaim. Now, I found that parva is what is called the name of the Indian historical documents in the Vedic writings. They're written on sheets of, or on leaves. I think it's of bamboo plants or something like that. It's, they have to recopy them every so many hundred years when they get old and fragile, but they're called parva, the history of India. And so the people of the books would be the Parvaim. And that's where one of his gold mines was. Well, that's down in the Karnataka region, which is across from when India connected to, are almost connected to North Africa. Madagascar was in between India and the Tanzanian side of Africa. Now, gold was found in India, in the area, that's the Karnataka region, which touched Madagascar. And this is, you know, before the Pangaea split up. Now, during Solomon's time, all the split up had occurred. And one of his other sources of gold, a very rich source, was in a place called Ophir. And Ophir supplied 420 talent weights of gold to King Solomon just from Ophir alone. And it was good gold. And it was gold found in the streams. You can ferret this out in the scriptures. Now, today, the French, the Chinese are still mining gold or collecting gold in the streams of Madagascar, because the gold washed down as gold dust from the granite mountains all around there in the northern part of Madagascar and down into the port region. So that was where King Solomon got 2/3 of his gold, was from Ophir, which was Madagascar. And today they are still letting the cheap labor sit in the rivers with pans and pan mine the gold. And they're also taking the banks along the river, which are red dirt, because of the gold content. It looks reddish. And they take that and they wash it in these pans. I watched a documentary on the women and children doing that. They get this gold dust and then they sell it to the Chinese or the French or whoever's, you know, in charge of their area. So that is the second one of Solomon's gold mine sites. Now, the third one was in a place where it's called Tarshish. and that it's where he traded for gold in northeast, northwest Africa, up near, near the Pillars of Hercules, near the two great rocks there in the Mediterranean that go into the Atlantic. I was familiar with the Hebrew, but not the English. So coming down from that into Africa, he traded with a country that had apes and peacocks and stuff like that, and he traded for gold there. Now, the name, Tarshish, is made up of tar and sheesh. Now, tar in the region is called opium tar, and shisha is a device that you smoke the tar with. So the land of Tarshish gave him gold to trade, to get gold from there by trade. So that was the third, mining source, if you wish, for Solomon's gold mines. Having done that, north of the Rock of Gibraltar, you got Spain, which was also known for its tar shisha type devices, and then south of that into North Africa, which is for a country that I'm trying to remember the name of it. I always have trouble with this, and it's not, right underneath the Rocks of Gibraltar. Anyway, I wanted to cover this because the article is trying to make it like all this gold came from there in Edom, old Edom in Israel. But my research shows that that's just not true. I found the gold mine sources for King Solomon. There's no question about it. Just like I found the Garden of Eden. It's all connected, very much connected.
Okay, and I like the headline on this, King Solomon's gold mine found, stand not so sure. I like that. And so it's kind of interesting when you came out with the Garden of Eden research and you compare your research to, competing research. I have to side with you on the weight of evidence every time. And this, very interesting. So you're saying, okay, so this article in the Jerusalem Post, King Solomon's Mines Found, you're kind of saying, hang on a minute. That's no. Is that what you're,
I'm saying they may have gotten some copper for, weapons and things like that there, but the gold, the quantity of gold we're talking about, is thousands of pounds,
Right.
And we know today there's only one place that is known for its rich gold and abundant gold. It's very fine gold. That's Madagascar. But Morocco was the other one I was trying to think about. Morocco. They traded in Morocco, which, were a bunch of dope heads. Hey, man, this is good. Tarshish, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Righty, Morocco. All right. Yeah.
All right. All right. Now, kind of one of my fun things that I was looking at today was a video about the 10 strangest planets that have been discovered, out in deep space somewhere. If you watch the video, they go through it one by one. This British guy speaks. Hold on. It's trying to play with me, not doing it. There are 10 of the planets. One of them is way out there. I forget how many light years, like 450 light years away or something like that. It spins at 4,000 miles an hour. The winds, are horrific on the planet and its atmosphere. And it has fragments of silicon, dioxide, like glass that has been fused into shards. And the wind is full of glass fragments traveling at 4,000 miles an hour. So it's not kind of listed as one of the planets that you want to move to, and survive. But each of the 10 planets they talk about has something like that about it. There's one planet that is not filled with winds with glass fragments in it, but it's a gigantic diamond. The whole planet is a hard diamond, but it's so far away, like in 450 light years or something like that, that you couldn't go harvest it and bring it back and say you've got a truckload or a spaceship load of diamond from it. Because even if you could do that magically and get it back here in time to put it in the market, it would so swamp the market with diamonds that diamonds would be like, you know, dirt. They'd be cheap because everybody could have one. But anyway, it's a whole planet that's a gigantic diamond, which I found interesting. There's another planet out there in that distance somewhere that it has a surface of ice, water ice, but it's on fire. And it's a rather complicated explanation the physicists give about how that can happen. But it above it is burning fire, and yet the pressure from the size of the planet is keeping the ice in ice form by the extreme pressure forming on it. And gases come up around it and burn. So anyway, that's another one of those neat places to visit when you're traveling the universe with the TARDIS, you know, Doctor Who.
Okay.
Yeah. There's another planet that really is a mystery. It doesn't reflect light. Well, maybe 1% of the light from its nearby star or anything else that might be its flying light is reflected. So it's the darkest planet in the known universe. And yet, when you look at it in infrared, its temperature is 1,100 degrees centigrade, and it glows red in the kind of orangey red in the infrared spectrum. But if you look at it with telescopes, you can't see it because it's black. So the only way to even find it is with infrared telescopes.
Hmm.
Interesting stuff. There's, you know, five or six more planets, and they discuss them there in this video, which is worth going through just to see the anomalies that are out there and tells you how many more mysteries there are to discover and solve and in our known universe. Anyway, that was one of my fun things.
Yeah, it's a great video. It's about 12 and a half minutes long, and yeah, wow, okay. Strange things out there.
Yeah, there are.
You know, yep. About the diamonds, I did have a question. Are there, and maybe this is off so far off topic, you don't even, yeah, but are there more diamonds, unmined diamonds? How can I put this? Are there more unmined diamonds that are available that would, you know, if there wasn't such a hold on the industry that could flood the market? And
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Down in South Africa, one of the deep mines they've got, some of them are several miles deep, where they drill down to what's called the craton level, the hard compressed material that's underneath the continents. In that craton material, they find kimberlite, I think it's called. Anyway, it's a very hard rock substance with diamonds embedded in it from the pressure. And there's a ton of diamonds in the cratons. And so perfecting a deep mining process, you could get them out that way to have natural diamonds. However, now then, like the Chatham process in California, they've been making artificial emeralds and diamonds, colored diamonds of, you know, various descriptions, which are beautiful. And they're actually better in their purity and in their facets than natural diamonds.
Wow.
So, you know, they could flood the market, and I guess to a degree they have. I've got here about 55 carats of emerald that Mr. Chatham made and had on his desk, and I talked with him and with his daughter years ago to get that. But it's perfect emeralds, just beautiful stuff.
Wow. Now, the same can't be said for example, minerals like gold and silver, right? Or could it? I don't want to go too far out in the weeds on this. I was just curious. Would there be?
Well,
go ahead.
You still got to mine them. I mean, there's plenty of gold over in India on the West Coast, that Karnataka region I'm telling you about.
Right.
It's just a matter of getting it out and refining it. Because of the world situation with the economies, with the threat of economies failing after the United States is becoming so strong again, paper money and local money for various countries is really quite dodgy. And that's why, you know, China and various other governments, the large governments, have been buying up gold.
Right.
That will be something that they can back a digital currency with or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we're going, is to digital money. There's just no question in my mind about that. But you've got to have an asset to back that, which, of course, gold would be.
And that's a good point. I'm still trying to wrap my brain around how do you back a digital currency, and I guess the simple answer is the same way you back a paper currency.
And then there will probably be laws enacted about private ownership of gold or silver that they're backing you with.
Yeah.
That controls the distribution or the density of gold and silver in the free market. Just by law, they do that. So you can't, you have to really trade digitally, but you have your, this backing is on an international, like a national level with gold and things like that.
Oh man. Okay. Wow. Yeah. I just saw a law real quick in New York or, the proposed law. One's community wanted to go nothing but digital currency. It's strange off the cuff thing. And, I think Cuomo came in and said, no, you can't do that. You have to accept cash. It was because of the convenience where stores were just saying, well, no, we're not going to take cash. We'll only use digital currency, but I digress. Go ahead.
That's all right. Over our own page, on standio.com, I just wanted to remind your listeners that we are having another giveaway. We're giving away about $950 worth of Rapture Series teachings from Perry Stone Ministries. Okay. We've given copies of this away before and to our friends. It's a biblically based lecture given by Perry Stone with illustration about the rapture and why it is real and where it came from, that kind of stuff. Now, about the third paragraph down in that article, it says Holly wrote this article to show how long ago the rapture was taught to the church. And if you click on that, you'll get to the tour article, which we mentioned a few weeks ago, I think, on the show, where it tells in there the article that she compiled from stuff that Jack Van Impe, supplied on the internet as well. The history of it, going back to the Dead Sea Scrolls, even where the rapture was mentioned, not the word rapture, but the event was discussed by then, and the Shepherd of Hermas, 95 to 100 AD, all these kind of things, where the people that say the rapture is just an invention, by the Seventh-day Adventists, in the 1850s. This is not true. Anyway, if you look at the article, she's got the listings there and the references to where the pre-tribulation doctrine emerged. And it was like several thousand years back,
Yeah, I find this very interesting. I would urge everyone, regardless of where you stand on the issue of the rapture, I believe it's going to happen when it happens. And when it happens, I just pray, if it's in my lifetime, pray that I'm worthy to be caught up in this. That's me. But very interesting research done by Holly. How long ago did she do this? Because I remember this being on there for quite some time, as you said.
I don't see that there's a date on it. No, I know it's been there for a couple of years.
Yeah, anyway. That's what I thought. Anyway, it's a good article. Good article. Yeah. And folks, I don't know. Don't be fighting about stuff like the rapture and stuff like that. In my view, just learn.
It's just something to put in your think about it bucket. Nobody died and left us in charge of interpreting scripture, but we do look at facts and evidence and try to put it into perspective. And that's all we're doing is sharing where we are with people. And, we reserve the right to be wrong.
There you go. And I like that too. So how can people, to enter, send your email to Stan, that's standale@standale.com.
With the words stone and drawing in the subject line.
Okay.
And we'll put you in there. We're going to draw it on February the 3rd. And for people that are international listeners, and some of them have already written in and joined the drawing from Australia, all we ask is that those that are overseas meet the postage requirement for it, because it could get pretty pricey sometimes.
Yeah.
And we'll tell them what it is anyway, see if they want to accept it. But,
Fantastic. So it's going to be all entries must be in by February 2nd. One entry per person. Winners will be drawn random generator February 3rd. And, and that's on your website. It's good. $95. It's just a 5 DVD series or a video set and book. That's good. All right. Go ahead.
Now, Holly put up an article, a link to it on our site there under the USA things in the first line, USA supporters line up 48 hours early to see President Trump in New Jersey. She was telling me that he was doing that to that one of the Democrats that became a Republican. And he said any time he wanted him to do a supporting lecture, he would. And so the guy said, yeah, I'd like that. And he said, well, okay, let's do it. Let's go to New Jersey and give a lecture. There were seating for like, 7,500 or something like that. But there were requests for 175,000 tickets to this lecture.
I saw that.
You don't see that in the Democratic side of things, but that is just enormous support for the president. I marvel at that. And it's the good Lord blessing him and his administration, because it's holding back the horrible alternative which waits out there on the Democratic side of things.
You know, you look at that and you just have to wonder what the left is thinking, you know, how... wow. That would give me, if I was on the other side, that would give me some serious heartburn to think that, man, you know, I don't think anyone else has a chance. I really don't with this. I mean, who else can bring crowds like that in? I haven't seen anyone.
No. And now George Soros, you know, historically he's taken over countries in Europe that have had civil war, you know, revolution in essence. He's backed party of members of both parties, you know, both sides of a revolution, so that no matter who wins, he's got control of the leadership of the new country. And he's doing that here with the United States. He's funding hundreds of millions of dollars worth to the Democratic type concepts here and for the Democratic Party to try to create this division in the United States, because it has a hard core of, you know, patriotic Americans, which are more conservative than the Democratic side of things. And so I wouldn't be surprised if he's not funding some of the things on the conservative side, just to be sure that the division in the United States is totally polarizing into two parties. And we have a civil war, which can be triggered by some shooting event or something shortly. You know, it's just Soros is an evil man. He really is. And his methodology in overtaking a country that he wants is being replayed here for the United States. It's a bigger objective, because the Americans and the American system has to be overthrown or defeated to form this new one world government that the Antichrist is going to bring in, because we wouldn't put up with that here. Normally, anyway.
Yeah, I saw Soros, his last speech not too long ago, and he looks like he's on his way out. And of course he is. Kids to take over for him, but wow, evil indeed. Kind of like betting on the pass and don't pass line in craps, but there it is.
Yeah, well, it's a good thing to tell people, because we're having the problems that we can see that are real and present dangers within the United States, in addition to the offshore ones. Time for people to get prepared to endure, you know, what is coming until, you know, maybe the United States is wiped out. I don't know, but you have to get prepared to endure as long as you can. Take care of your family.
Amen. Well, brother, you get some rest, some well-deserved rest this evening, and thank you so much for taking the time out to come on this show. I know a lot of people just look forward to this segment alone, and you've got a lot of people out there just watching and following what you do and following your website, and I thank you. Thank you very much. We're at the end of the show.
Thank you, Doug, and thank you to your listeners that you know, support us and email to us and things, and we've had nearly 17,000 visits to one URL I had up on the YouTube channel about the smuggled-like video from China over the coronavirus issue. So thank you to all those people that are watching that and spreading the word.
All right, my friend. God bless. Tell Holly all the best. We're praying for her and thinking about her, and you too, and your kids and your furry kids. Thank you.
Thank you. They're all doing well, too. Right. Bye-bye now.
All right.
Lord bless you.
Folks, we're out of time. That was Stan Dale. What's that? Well, Eric, then come on and talk.
EMP Shield.
EMP Shield.
Keith Hansen Show.
That's right. Folks, if you haven't done so already, on HagmanReportLive.com, look down. There's an extra section, Keith Hansen Show, giving an hour of audio of incredible information. He's bringing on guests from all over. Folks, go to the Keith Hansen Show on HagmanReportLive.com. 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 And look right there. There's Keith. powered by the Hagman Report. That's hour three for this broadcast. Now I'm out of time. Having said that, everyone have a great night until tomorrow. Well, tomorrow Brandon House is going to be guest hosting. Pastor David Lankford is going to be appearing. God bless. Thank you.